Welcome, everyone, to the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast by Fantastic Geek. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello there, Pete.
Hey there, Matt. As you know, I live outside of the box. What's going on?
Not too much, Pete. Today, we are talking, for the second time that we've been able to see this episode, we're talking about episode 104, entitled I Spy. And Pete, for this episode, who is our sponsor?
Well, today's episode is brought to us by the good people at Portable Plastic Urinals. Their product adapts now for those of you with boy parts and girl parts.
And hopefully the boy parts and girl parts are self-explanatory. Pete, let's jump into first impressions of this episode, an episode that we saw first at New York Comic Con last Saturday, and then the rest of the nation has joined us in seeing it tonight. Pete, your thoughts?
Well, really, second impressions for us, and, you know, true, having initially taken this in the middle of the New York Comic Con panel, which we will get to a little bit more later in the show. We've got a clip for you. The idea here that this was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s most sound episode all around. Matt, I think it was you that said on our initial viewing that all the parts are clicking. I could not agree more. I think, well, the news we need to mention too, not having podcasted since the announcement, it was 48 hours before Comic-Con, is that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been picked up for a full 22-episode order by ABC, which we assume was a foregone conclusion. And it's because of efforts like this that, really make that a certainty. And I would imagine very soon, possibly by the middle to end of November sweeps, we're going to hear that they're going to get a second season.
Well, that certainly is something to look forward to. And I read some blurb online today that basically was saying words to that effect that, you know, hey, if the ratings keep holding where they're at, particularly with some of the, Live Plus 3, Live Plus 7 ratings that come in, the vast number of people who are watching the show, although not necessarily live, that a renewal for the second season can't be too far away. But yeah, Pete, focusing on this episode, you have the different spy parts working so well, kind of Coulson as mission commander, and Melinda May kind of helping to oversee things, Ward back in his element as the frontline guy, the solo agent who maybe has some help and then, of course, needs it from his agent in training. And, of course, our beloved Fitzsimmons, the Wonder Twins, kind of aiding along the way and having their own moment. Just an absolutely fantastic episode, the best of the quartet, as I called it on Twitter, and certainly a great prediction, let's hope, of things to come.
And I think it portends of success as well. The other thing that's been floated is that Marvel may be shopping as many as four other future series for TV, maybe for Amazon, maybe for cable, things like that. And again, you know, people are standing up and taking notice of this show's success. So with that, Matt, why don't we debrief this bad boy?
Absolutely. We had an episode that started with some real location work in Sydney, as we learned at New York Comic Con. I don't know that necessarily the exteriors were in Sydney, but the subway station in Sydney, in Stockholm. All right, there we are, right part of the world. But certainly impressive that they are literally globetrotting, whether it's Paris and the pilot or here to Stockholm this time. And let's kind of focus on that initial scene there, Pete. I thought that it was a good, certainly a good use of those red masked men, the initial fake out for bad guys. Although I know that when we first saw the episode, you had a particular comment about a little bit of kind of story manipulation going on there.
Yes. You know, being somebody who, like a normal audience, Matt, you know, you would never cop to being a normal member of our audience, but watches the preview for the next week. You know, that was the hand that was shown early. And the very critical thing that I couldn't get past particularly upon our first viewing of this at New York Comic Con, is that, you know, 55 men in Kabuki theater style masks, as you know, the steely Agent May would term later, would rouse all sorts of suspicion. I mean, good on Marvel and the writing team for acknowledging that, you know, one, acknowledging actual social media applications, Facebook, Flickr, Instagram, and, you know, writing to that rather than creating, you know, Fakebook or, you know, Face Space or whatever. Okay. Thank you for not treating us like we're idiots. And, you know, that's important as a writer, and that's important for viewers. So thank you for writing at least in a part of the world that we live. Okay. But there's no way at all in the United States or in another part of the world that, excuse me, that, you know, 55 men in red masks would be able to walk into a method of mass transportation with seeming impunity, with suitcases handcuffed to their arms, and not create an entire security bottleneck. Okay. No one, I mean, yeah, people were taking pictures and people were noticing, but, you know, and again, I think it's trying to speak a little to the nonplussed, you know, international flair of the city there. But come on, people would be freaking out.
Aside from the fact, Pete, that it was not 55 guys, it was maybe 12. I think that's more hyperbole than an error on your part.
That was the number that was thrown out. I think that
really
was meant to be in the different locations that they described, the casino, the other place that they mentioned, as far as all the different areas where the gem merchant was moving the diamonds.
Ah, well, I only saw the episode twice, Pete. You know, I can't expect it to catch every detail.
Well, I was a full-time reporter, so there you
indeed
go.
Regular. You know what's? You always got the exclusives with Spider-Man too. I could never figure out how that was.
Yeah.
And always like in private. Never kind of, you know, nobody ever saw the two of you together. Anyhow, I think you raise a fair point. Ultimately, I think that, you know, for as much as you might say, well, it could be one of these, you know, like, you know, David Blaine in the underwater for a week spectacle. It could be some sort of guerrilla marketing thing. Yeah, but not with red. I mean, you're right. Not with red masks going into a subway. I will just throw out one possible gimme. If you want to give the Marvel Cinematic Universe it, and I personally don't. Do we know that there was a? Do we know for sure that there was a 9/11 in the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
No, we definitely don't. But I think the realistic idea is that our universes are, for, you know, better or worse, merged.
And I certainly would agree with that. And if not for a catastrophe like that, certainly, you know, the Battle of New York and things like that, where people would just be saying, "This is weird. This is not normal." And you're, you know, living by the old New York subway, New York Metro Police line. If you see something, say something. And
I mean, think about it too, Matt. You know, what would terrorists be clamoring for if, you know, in a post Battle of New York world, they would want weapons of international, or I'm sorry, intergalactic destruction. They would be trying to get their hands on, you know, a Tesseract, or the device that we saw the 084, you know, in the mine in, I'm sorry, in the temple in, what was that, Guatemala or Peru?
I'm blanking on the, yeah. Was it Peru? I think it was Peru.
I believe it was, yes, it was Peru. They would, you know, be trying to get these things. So it really kind of only makes sense that it was Peru, that, you know, I mean, listen, the red masks, you know, the color is instant tip, or, you know, not really the tip, the misdirection, as we'll talk in the dossier yet again, of, ooh, Crimson Tide, a Red Tide, you know.
Well, how about, can we save that for the dossier there, Pete? Slow down, guy. Name dropping potential sources of evil.
But, you know, this episode, more than any so far, you know, really got it on the intrigue, you know. Topical on top of that, you know, with the references they make to existing social media in our world, with the idea, you know, love that Coulson is the guy to do this to. People are surveilling themselves. Despite the fact that we are in a third week now of a government shutdown, thank God SHIELD is out there utilizing people's social media to keep us safe.
Well, I mean, I'm reminded of the fact that the shield that we saw in Avengers, you know, they were making Tesseract technology weapons, you know, if they needed it, which certainly I think, I don't know how deeply Agents of SHIELD is going to delve into kind of the, you know, hints toward kind of the NSA Snowden debate. But I think that there's a little edge, the very, very edge of the show is certainly willing to kind of dip its toe in and say, hey, everybody likes Coulson, everybody likes our team. But boy, you know, SHIELD has lots and lots of power, essentially.
You know what I loved at the beginning of this episode? I love the initial shot of the bus coming straight at us, you know, right into the cockpit. That early conversation between Coulson and May, and then, you know, he can just transition smoothly to going back to the you know, the very rear of the aircraft and talking to Sky in the car, and the banter back and forth about AC. Sky's starting to grow on me, you know, but this episode had quite a bit.
It's a well-directed episode, too, directed by Roxanne Dawson, who Star Trek fans might remember as being in Star Trek Voyager in the role of Pete?
B'Elanna Torres.
There you go. The half-Hispanic human, half-Klingon engineer. And she brought some further nice camera work to it, particularly in the beginning, as the red-masked people are kind of heading toward the train, still on the surface area there. I liked how, like, the focus was on them, but the camera would seem to find Akela. And obviously, you know, we would quickly learn by the end of the teaser act that she was the focus in many ways. But it was just kind of this sense of, oh, there's a woman there. And then, you know, they kind of do the initial shot of her. And then when they're down in the subway, it's the same thing. The guys kind of walk in, and then she just kind of, you know, kind of fades out of the background there. Just some really, really nice stuff there out of Roxanne Dawson.
Definitely. You know, later on, and again, you know, we'll talk with New York Comic Con, but as we learned from Jeff Loeb this weekend, you know, they are shooting around the world, at least pieces for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They were in Paris for the pilot. They shot.
Who had called that one, Pete? Oh, that was me.
Spoiler Matt.
That's right.
So they did shoot in Paris for the pilot. They shot in Sweden, as he revealed, for at least the beginning of this episode. And, you know, that international flair, the scope, is really what is setting Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. apart from a lot of other. I mean, this isn't a straight procedural, but a lot of other procedural type shows, and that they could merge it fairly seamlessly with the fact that, all right, we shot in Sweden and then we're going to merge it with the quote unquote Belarus backlot there, as you and I picked up. That was very clearly, you know, shot at the back of a studio.
Yeah, I guarantee you that that was the Universal backlot they have. I know there's a particular name. It's like Old Europe or something like that. Or maybe it's Quasimodo Corner or something like that, but it's like this extremely old portion of the Universal backlot. This, of course, assumes it wasn't taken in the fire that happened 10 years ago, and I'm completely full of nonsense. But yeah, absolutely. When they're searching for Akela, it is so backlot.
I mean, you could smell the plaster, but it's okay. It's all right, because if you're going to give us that early effort, I think the viewer, an intelligent, informed viewer, is gonna let you slide on, all right, they went and shot this in the back of a studio. That is, after all, what it's for.
Speaking of letting something slide, I had a slight little quibble with the golf ball gag. It's awesome that the diamonds are going to be hidden in the golf balls, and you know, there's going to be this, you know, it's easy to get across borders. And I know, too, it's television. It's a visual medium. You need to show things. You don't just tell things. But it's like, congrats, I have $30 million worth of diamonds divided into four golf balls. Here's one. I will demonstrate it. Now, congrats, you get to stand there with Alka-Seltzer and golf ball in your hand. Good luck fencing that. Good luck getting that across the border. The other three, no problem. Pay me now, please.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely leaves the question, you know, what does he have to reconstitute it into a golf ball? Does he have to go to a putt-putt course and, you know, push all of those diamonds into a hole, and then it's going to come out a ball, or maybe he's going to go to the bar. I don't know how he's putting that back together. And yes, it speaks to the visual nature of TV. But again, we let it slide.
Last thing for me I wanted to mention was I thought that there was a great cut when Akilah gets a shot. We kind of have, you know, Coulson knock down the door, shoot her. We understand from, you know, once again, Chekhov's gun returns. This time both has Chekhov's stun gun and Chekhov's safety/clip switch. But it's just quick, boom, he appears, he fires, cut to black, and they kind of hold the black for a couple of beats, then allow her to wake up on the bus. Really nice camera work again out of B'Elanna Torres, a.k.a. director Roxanne Dawson.
Definitely. Let's take it into the dossier here, Matt. And first up this week, of course, with the misdirection, are our red-faced couriers, our crimson couriers, if you will.
Indeed.
And, you know, immediately we suspect they're the bad guys, but that's just too easy. You know, I'm going to jump to the final idea of who the ultimate villain in this episode might be, the real threat, as it's termed later on. You know, we never get to the bottom of who is watching the Watchers through the iSpy cam. And is it the rising tide? I think that's a question we're going to need to ask ourselves with a lot of these cases. We're not reaching, you know, a level of discovery just yet.
Oh, I would be so ticked off if that's the case, because to me, that based on what we've been presented so far, that's the equivalent of, you know, the FBI or the NSA, CIA, whoever. You know, our secret spies hiring somebody who was a freelancer for WikiLeaks only to discover that Al-Qaeda is actually run by Julian Assange. I hope they don't go there. Keep the rising tide, pardon me, not the crimson tide. Keep the rising tide separate from this. I agree, Pete. I think that we were introduced to what will become the anti-shield, if you will. You know, whether it's, you know, whatever they're going to call it, whether it exists in the Marvel Universe previously or not, I think that this is going to be, you know, the Spectre to James Bond. But I would be disappointed if it's like the thing we mentioned in the first episode that's like the opposite of Secret Shield. And if, you know, again, I don't want Julian Assange to suddenly say, you know, 'twas I who planned the attacks. You know, it's just, to me, that's just a little bit too kind of closed universe cute.
I don't have such a problem with it, you know, building up to that, because then I think that will peel back another layer in terms of whatever other villainy exists that's not, you know, super villainy. I mean, we know that Graviton potentially after last week's episode is going to be brought into play. So, you know, that I'm okay with. Let's talk about Akilah Amador here. You know, our gem-stealing, Coulson-trained, lost-in-a-gulag protege who doesn't play well with others.
I thought that, you know, certainly a nice use of a character, a nice use of a first-half villain. the fact that she kind of is, you know, as we learn pretty quickly, probably within the, you know, first 15 minutes, we learn that, you know, she is a former agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. So they're fighting one of their own that knows their own tricks. There's a big bonus there. I think, too, it's totally reasonable that Skye is thinking, hey, maybe it's one of these crazy out there things. And she's kind of so, you know, ESP, she keeps floating. I think it's also an opportunity for the show to just kind of, I don't know, give her a little, not give her, rather give the audience a little bit of a boundary saying, yes, we sometimes have aliens coming through portals in the sky and whatnot, but we're not going to, you know, we're not going to go crazy in terms of, I mean, not just like we know Robert Downey Jr. is not going to show up and all the things we've talked about, but I think it's also kind of saying this isn't the X-Files, this isn't Men in Black, even though we're kind of inhabiting a similar space. And I thought that this was just a great episode to say, you know, Robot Eye is not that far-fetched. To have her kind of hold her head and go, X-Men secret powers of reading the mind is a place that the show is saying they are not going, Pete.
I disagree. I think they're kicking it down the road. They're not doing it now. They're doing it later on, because that's going to be, you know, if not a direct reference to Skye saying, oh, there I was telling you, remember in episode four, there was some ESP going on. I mean, that she references aliens that are now a part of this universe, that this has happened. And no surprise later when we have alien hieroglyphics and equations or whatever on a chalkboard where guys are crunching numbers matter-of-factly, you know, and some stranger walks in, okay, this is a different type of world. So I'm not going to say, and I'm not going to believe for a moment that at some point we're not going to get into telekinesis, maybe even next week.
Well, I wouldn't know anything about that, Pete, since I... As soon as I see the Joss Whedon mutant going rawr, I turn the TV off.
Well, you are poor for it, my friend.
Well, I like seeing the episodes as the creators present them, not the ABC publicity people. But by the way, you have inspired in me something that I'm just adding to my notes for level 7, which I'll save until then. But depending on how large a world they want to make this Marvel Cinematic Universe TV division, you might be onto something there.
The heart of this episode, though, is Akila. And again, with the misdirection, you know, early viewed as, you know, the villain, later turned into an asset, as somebody that they help out. They remove the eye camera, you know, gives us a little bit that we'll chew over in level 7 in a little bit. I loved May in this episode. You know, you can never get enough Ming-Na Wen. And, you know, when she says, again, with that resolve of hers, that she's a weapon, you know, there it takes one to know one. And, you know, the one of the things in the early sequence with the subway that stuck with me is, you know, first, she took a man's hand off with essentially her bare hands. I mean, yes, the guy had, you know, a handcuff going from, you know, his arm to the suitcase, but she ripped it off. Okay. Which immediately you were thinking superpowers or extra strength or whatever it was. And then the fact when the subway goes by, and again, credit Dawson with the ability to set up the shot, you know, subway goes by and she's gone from, you know, looking at diamonds next to the tracks to suddenly, you know, being somewhere on a speeding subway that's just come by. Okay. This woman is dangerous. They're going to come back to her. How they use her, we'll have to see. You know, I think we've not seen the last of Akila Amador.
I certainly would agree. I certainly would hope so. You know, she's a great presence in that she's kind of, you know, conflicted, and this, you know, this view that we've gotten on this new mysterious agency that was compelling her to do these awful things certainly is was all welcome. I'll quickly mention, by the way, Pete, her eye surgery was perfectly edited. You know, they kind of tease the needle, then in it goes. We see it for a split second longer than we would like, and then there's the whole bit with, you know, pulling the eye out and all that. It's just a fantastic scene from beginning to end.
It was well done, you know, and you know, we see them put it in the little, you know, bomb tube or whatever, and then what is done when we finally get to the Englishman, you know, this defrocked MI6 agent who, just like Akila, had gone missing and is now being manipulated by, you know, what I can only assume is the rising tide, who's this real threat, who's giving them their orders, who's handling them. Love that the handler was being handled himself. And, you know, it would be one thing to just throw it in the bomb tube and have it go off and see the smoke. We see it go off, you know, very much like Mission Impossible 3 in the eye there. There's a toll to that. And we feel for Akila having been trapped and the realization that her handler was just as trapped as she was.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a slight shade of Saw, you know, where it's like the bad guy actually isn't the bad guy. He's victim as much as, victim of the larger bad guy. And there's just something, as you say, something so unsettling to kind of see asymmetrical eyes, particularly that, you know, oh no, and the kind of the whine and the crunch and the little spray of blood through the liquid of the eye. It's just, You can't help but feel for this guy. I mean, it's just an incredibly effective scene that shows that even your bad guys can have depth and can have pathos and sympathy and all of that. And I think Pete rounds out the dossier nicely.
Thank you very much. So let's talk a little bit about the New York Comic Con this week, Matt.
We are going to focus right now just on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. portion. We will later in the week, probably Thursday, perhaps Friday, on our pop culture podcast feed, which, by the way, is fantasticgeek.blogspot.com and on iTunes. We'll kind of talk about New York Comic Con as a whole, but focusing particularly on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. portion, Pete, you and I waited in line for 4 hours. Maybe it wasn't quite 4 hours, but we were there 4 hours before the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. panel in order to get in there on time so that we could see Fitzsimmons along with Jeff Loeb. And Pete, let's start with a clip where I was, they said, oh, now it's time for audience questions. And I went up to the mic and this short clip, about 90 seconds long, the audio isn't fantastic, I will admit, but it starts with me complimenting the show for its use of smart female characters in the series.
Over on this side. I'm a dad that's been saying that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has strong female characters in it. My question is actually for me, and that's one of the three
I mean, yeah, I would have an monkey already. I mean, that's a pretty good idea to have a pharmacistic monkey.
Would it be a cowardly monkey?
No, it would be a brave monkey. And I think, you know, I think we should all rally behind this idea that it's a monkey. And they will give me a brave monkey. Thank you, Brad. I'll give you that $10 when you see it.
Well done there, Matt. And I say that again as somebody with interview training. Couldn't have done a better job myself. But I do just want to preface that that recording was made under duress in that When they showed the episode on Saturday, early Saturday evening, which the lovely Elizabeth Hensridge and Ian DeCakester had not even seen yet themselves, Marvel employed private security who were sweeping the aisles with night vision goggles looking for people recording this. And I did not record the video, of course, you know, abiding by their requests. But when you went up there, I said, you know, Matt's going to ask a question and we want to have this for our listeners. You never know of these panels what will wind up on the internet in terms of being supplied by Comic-Con or by Marvel. And I said, you know what? He's asking a question. This is public domain. I'm going to put it out. Other people had their phones out too, so I wasn't terribly worried that it was going to be confiscated. But had to be done, man. I felt like a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent myself.
Well, I have to say, I'm not particularly a shy speaker in public, but just standing in line, it was like, oh my goodness, there's 3,000 people in this room. In retrospect, I wish I had like leaned into the microphone, but it was a little bit nerve wracking. But hopefully the audio for our listeners was good enough. My actual question there to Ian, aka Agent Fitz, regarding in episode 103, how he wishes for his spy monkey. He seemed, I'm sure he was in part, you know, playing along. But he seemed kind of rather game towards the Fitz monkey somehow making its way into the show.
Well, listen, fan campaigns are nothing new to this podcast group in general. Okay. The old PH Geek, which has now morphed into Fantastic Geek, was behind the Rocks for Fox campaign to have the Alcatraz TV show extended, and while they did not get a second season order, Fox felt the wrath there under several tons of sedimentary and igneous stones that wound up on their steps there. So I'm going to go on record and say that we will not stop mentioning the Fitz monkey. And once you get on there on Twitter and hashtag Fitz monkey until it happens. Okay.
And that's FITZMONKEY.
Yes. Okay. We are not going to let it go. It's too good an idea. You know, one of the Matt, you clearly asked the best question and you got the best response of anybody to go to the mic. And there were, you know, half dozen, say, people to do that during that panel. Okay. But one of the other questions was, you know, would Marvel do a Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Comic? I think it's inevitable that it's going to happen. And I want to see at least a one-off issue of Fitzsimmons and the genetically engineered talking you know, spy monkey.
I think absolutely. I mean, hashtag Fitz monkey, it's not just a cry on Twitter. I think it's something that, I mean, my goodness, you know, if the actor behind Fitz thinks it's a good idea, who knows that character better than anyone else? But Pete, it was all in all just a wonderful experience. I think hopefully next year they'll have an even bigger presence there with more of the actors. And I guess that, you know, we'll talk more, Pete, you and I, about New York Comic Con on our pop culture podcast later in the week. But for right now, Pete, we're talking Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. 24/7, or at least for the next 20 minutes or so. What is next?
Well, we go from 24/7 to level 7 here, Matt, in our level 7 segment, giving you all the clearance here. Okay. Gotta ask it. What was with the card that is going to access all these levels that was paid $30 million for? It never came back up. Did I miss a detail? What is that all about?
You know, I had wondered that on this, the second viewing. It crossed my mind. Was that possibly the ID card that Ward was using, that Akilah would have used when they're in the factory space, you know, to get you through? I'm a janitor security, and to get you through upstairs security, and to get you into, you know, I just tried to seduce the guard security.
There was a Delta 5 that he was going. I think of that now that you mentioned that. It was a little unclear in its presentation. I think, again, in retrospect, you know, taking care of the viewer, maybe just a more direct line, you know, initially watching it, you know, I thought they were back in the air when suddenly Melinda May shows up in Aquila's bedroom. So it begged the question, how did she go rogue, get off the plane that she would have been flying? And, you know, they had a couple establishing shots of, you know, the bus in the hangar and, you know, the ramp and everything going on there. So that was just, you know, the excitement of Comic-Con and everything there. You know, the stuff with Aquila and the continuing mystery of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that we come roundabout back to this week is what's going on with Coulson. You know, she demands to know the first time they catch up, you know, where's the I told you so, which apparently Coulson was known to do in the past. You know, it's referenced repeatedly how he pushed her. Okay. And, you know, she became what she became. And then later on, you know, when May says that he nearly died. So it's now been spoken by a character that he didn't die. He nearly died. Okay. And then, of course, Aquila comes with, you know, maybe the biggest revelation of the episode. You know, what did they do to him? And we've talked about different theories. You know, the Scarlet Witch theory is gaining some traction online, and the idea that he could be a character who will evolve into the Vision, who is a Marvel character. I think it's very pregnant with possibility right now. And I love that we got more of that in this episode.
I think particularly her as a former agent, it's so kind of familiar to say, what did they do to him? And I think that that certainly is her attempt at you know, a familiar indictment. If not S.H.I.E.L.D., then who? And I would argue that S.H.I.E.L.D. itself. I actually rewatched Avengers a couple days ago, and I just had this flash that I'm certainly, there's no way I'm the first person to come up with this prediction, but I just had this notion that in the finale of this season, which, by the way, we were told by Jeff Loeb, head of Marvel Television, and a guy who took a shot at Lost, he said, you know, that this mystery will be solved this season.
He also said they know what the end of the season is.
So my thinking is this, Pete. Here's my prediction, my level 7 prediction, that in the finale, we not only have the return of Samuel L. Jackson and Kobe Smulders, I'm here. I'm going to bet you right here, right now, that in the finale, we flash back to scenes from the Avengers where Coulson dies or presumably dies or is wounded or whatever, and its footage is integrated into the show. Then they will have shot new footage for the show that simply continues that. Pull out the helicarrier set or rebuild a corner of it, whatever it might be. And we're actually going to see the deed done, whatever it is. Life model decoy, you know, mental soul transference, you know, whatever, magic, whatever it is. I think that we're going to see, you know, returning from the Avengers, we'll see the people who behind the scenes would have been participating in this in terms of Sam Jackson and Kobe Smulders. So I guess we'll find out in May.
I'm going to, because I've already seen the finale, I'm going to disagree. Spoiler Pete sees all.
Wow.
You're actually
just seen the unwritten. The show's only been picked up for an episode 22 last week, and you've already seen the unshot, unscripted finale.
Again, I see ahead, man, just like the Vision. Okay. What you're actually describing is going to be a late sweeps episode. The finale of the season is going to actually deal with what we saw tonight. These hieroglyphics are actually a tease for the Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh,
you beat me to it. You beat me to it. I think you can only be right about that.
I've seen the finale, Matt. There's, again, hashtag spoiler Pete.
I mean, a May finale. And then Guardians of the Galaxy in August.
People will be buzzing about it for 2 months.
Pete, one other, it's kind of a low level seven, but I think given the important people involved in this theory, I think you can understand why it's level seven. Pete, here's my theory. Do you know why they called it backscatter instead of X-ray?
Why?
Because, Pete, if you put Ward with his, you know, dark hair and square jaw in glasses and said, this guy looks through his glasses with X-ray vision, you would have promptly had a lawsuit from DC Comics and Warner Brothers in the morning. So I think they're just like, let's not call it X-ray vision. What should we call it? Ooh, backscatter. That's like spy technical term for your X-ray camera eyeballs, you know, glasses.
Yeah. So, on first viewing, that term was a little confusing, you know, back chatter, back scatter, and everything there. But yeah, I agree with you. And Twitter was abuzz with, he looks like Clark Kent. You know, all that stuff tonight. You know, too bad, you know, that other comics warehouse over there is in utter disarray, you know, and just throwing Ben Affleck after bad money. Moving forward, my last level seven theory for tonight, Matt, I want to just posit the possibility. Okay. Could Akilah Amador, you know, what does she have in common with Nick Fury? Could there be a connection there? Could she be his daughter?
What is it, Pete? Wait, could she be what?
Could she be his daughter?
Now, what makes you say that, Pete?
The eye patches, Matt.
Oh, matching eye patches.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's certainly a possibility. Could you see that as a mid-season reveal? You know, damn it, Coulson. You know, you blew up the bus again. I gotta have my daughter watch you now. You know, and she's gonna keep her eye on you.
Actually, I, you know what, Pete, connected to that, I'm not a reader of Marvel Comics, but I was reading a couple days ago that in light of the popularity of the Sam Jackson Nick Fury, you know, oftentimes in the comics they'll have kind of different timelines. Marvel has kind of the main timeline and the ultimate timeline. But what they did in the main timeline apparently was they took the original character of Nick Fury, who was, you know, white and originated in the 60s, and just in the last year or two or three, they officially killed him off and introduced his son, his African-American son, Nick Fury Jr., to kind of take the place of, you know, the Nick Fury need in that universe. So they've kind of officially, you know, and of course Nick Fury Jr. looks like Samuel L. Jackson, and he's, you know, referred to as Nick Fury and all that. So it's kind of, it's neat that the two universes have kind of spoken to each other in that regard.
That's awesome. And, you know, in all seriousness, is there a connection between Akilah and Fury? I mean, listen, I think that might be a little bit of a stretch. But, you know, I dug the symmetry of the eye patch. And who's to say? I mean, do you put a glass eye in there and just, well, she's only got one eye? Or do you go for it and do you put the eye patch on there? You know, maybe a different way. You do the kind of bolt on rather than the wraparound or whatever. You make it visually interesting. And when she's brought back, you know, and Loeb very strongly hinted that she will be back, you know, attempt to draw further connection there. I think it could be kind of cool. You know, she's got a bad attitude to her. I think it would only make sense. You know, and again, you know, you don't want to do it just because she's African-American, Fury's African-American, but, you know, they have obviously the bond in terms of race. They have the bond in terms of missing an eye. It could be a kind of cool father-daughter type of thing.
Something tells me they won't go there with that, but particularly since it's kind of already... you know, the family atmosphere amongst our weekly Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I suppose time will tell.
All righty. So with that, Matt, let's get into our decrypted transmissions for today.
Indeed. The first decrypted transmission comes from somebody that we've heard from before. That, of course, is Mike Sorensen. He sent a tweet or two that predicted about this episode that it would be Akilah's powers would be centered around telepathy or telekinesis abilities, explaining the no-lights ability to differentiate between civvies and targets. He then followed that up literally 4 minutes later, before there was any sort of reveal. He followed up by saying, or she's a ninja trained like Jinx from G.I. Joe. Then he said, hashtag I spy with no eyes. So certainly some, good kind of on-the-fly predicting there from Mike. with that, moving on, Pete, kind of something a little bit more in the theory realm of things. A tweet from Yul Tolbert, who said, I'm still holding on to the theory that Coulson is a clone. So any thoughts there, Pete?
I think the clone thing is just a little wonky in terms of what they're trying to do. You can't take the man away from Coulson. That's why I think it was important that it was established tonight that he didn't die. He may have been near death. I think he's become something other, but I don't think he's not human, or I don't think he's not a copy. We come back to the line. Tahiti is a magical place. There's something magical that's gone on with him. And that's why I really like this Scarlet Witch idea.
What did they do to him?
It's what a nice did she do to him?
Wait, she who? Oh, the
Scarlet Witch.
Well, there also, don't forget, there also was that cellist.
There was.
But it's a nice season-long mystery.
What if she was the cellist undercover? What if, Matt, in that penultimate sweeps episode, okay, where, you know, he's feeling the life coursing out of him, you know, he flashes to the cellist, and the cellist is the Scarlet Witch.
You're certainly hanging your hat on that, aren't you?
Again, Matt, I've seen the finale.
Well, of the series, season 10. well, Pete, I know there's one, though your scope is broad, there was one technical issue that that escaped your gaze. We hear again from Mike Sorensen, who says, not to us, he says to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., please, guys, technical advisors, Sky is holding a Glock. Glocks do not have safeties. He says, give me a call if you need an advisor. And then I had said to him, basically agreeing with him, like, if you can catch that as a gun enthusiast, shame on them. There's certainly enough guns out there to do what you need to do. And if there aren't, you just say, oh, it's the special night-night pistol that has the oopsie-daisy button. You know, like, you can, there's enough fiction in this universe. Mike fills us in that Ward carries a standard S&W MP. Which also has no external safety, and Sky definitely was holding a Glock, and he calls this a Hollywood problem.
I mean, listen, I'm not a gun guy. I've been shot at. I've never shot a gun, but the idea here, okay, we get it, and the gun enthusiasts will note that. I don't think Hollywood shows tend to employ people who are really knowledgeable about guns. I think they employ people who, you know, can mimic the type of things that are out there, but not necessarily to the form and function of, you know, what you're going to find in shooting ranges or at gun shows or anything like that. Again, a forgivable mistake. It doesn't take you out of what's going on. The point was that, you know, the safety, the magazine eject, the girl that is not the trained, instrument that Ward is, she's a hacktivist. She's clumsy with these things. We've seen her evolve, but only to a point through 4 episodes.
Well, with that, Pete, we have a lovely email from our pal in the UK, Ian. who says, I needed some Fitzsimmons magic this weekend, as my PC has managed to destroy itself. But that didn't stop me from finding a way to follow all the New York Comic Con tweets over the weekend. Ian goes on to say, really enjoyed the coverage that I saw and all the pictures that you both and others were posting. Looks like a really great con. I'll pause Ian's words to mention, by the way, Pete, that in addition to our pictures up on Instagram, I also dumped a bunch of them onto Flickr. I created a Flickr for Fantastic Geek, and I'll repost the link on our Twitter to that because I'm new to Flickr, so I'm not sure if there's some sort of link shortening thing there or whatever, but there's like 400 pictures you can scroll through, some of the wonderful cosplay ladies, others of the different panels we were at and whatnot. So for anyone interested in the pictures. But anyhow, Ian's words continue. It's talking of Fitz, I realized this weekend that I recognized him, where I recognized him from. He was in a couple of UK TV shows, one about a trainee veterinarian surgeon in the 1930s, and one called The Fades, a short-lived supernatural TV series where he had an English accent, not his natural Scottish, which is probably the worst Scottish accent ever that I just did. Anyhow, Ian says, after I had written my question last week, I had another thought that ties back to Lost, sort of. Jeff Loeb would not be happy. Anyhow, that was my own parenthetical insertion there. Anyhow, Ian says, do you recall the recently leaked ABC series brief that said Lost was going to be a show that switched between genres each week? Well, I think that is also what S.H.I.E.L.D. Has sold itself to ABC as, at least initially, switching from a cop show to a superhero show to an action-adventure show or wherever it needs to head to tell a good story. I like this way of doing things very much, as it will help stop things getting stale and help to develop interest in the characters, not just the overall big plot. Bye for now, Ian. So your thoughts, Pete, do we have, in addition to kind of a procedural hybrid, do we have a jack-of-all-trades in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I think it's going to be fairly straightforward in terms of the genrefication of this show. You know, it's that procedural idea, and then, you know, they're going to mix it up. Will it be the spy mystery like it was this week? Will it be, you know, some sci-fi like we had last week? At the same time, the corporate intrigue. I think there's enough wiggle room to keep it fresh, but I think to the point where it would be a completely different genre each week, it would be difficult to follow on a week-to-week basis.
Well, I don't know that Ian is arguing for vastly different genres. I just think, you know, you kind of had a little bit more of, like episode 102 was a little more of kind of your action set piece. This was a bit more kind of James Bond-y. You know, last week was a little bit more kind of slightly kind of cop oriented. I mean, yeah, they're kind of globe hopping, but just where it's not the strict procedural format of, you know, find this week's bad guy, bad thing, do the investigation, fake you out halfway through. Although they do seem to always have the first half bad guy and the second half bad guy. But anyhow, Pete, moving on, we have an email from Andy, who says, hey guys, I really like this episode as we are starting to head into a more grittier tone on S.H.I.E.L.D. while still keeping the bright tone it had since the pilot. Felt that Coulson was least featured, but maybe there are some deleted scenes of him that will end up on the Blu-ray/DVD. One of the show's strengths is that they really have an international feeling to it by traveling to all these places like Sweden, for example. Overall, great episode, and you guys are doing a great job with the podcast. That is from Andy B., who, by the way, is host of the Helicarrier S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. So, Pete, your thoughts on having a little less Coulson this week?
Well, first off, Andy, thank you for the praise. You know, a little less Coulson, I mean, listen, it's like, you know, coriander. You don't sprinkle it all over the place. You put just enough in to get the flavor, and it goes a long way. And, you know, this is what Coulson does. You know, will he get his own episodes? I'm sure he will at some point. But, you know, he's there to, you know, push the team. Just like the Avengers needed a push, he pushes these guys. Some he's pushed too far with Akilah Amador. But, you know, in this episode, he pushed all the right buttons, and I think we'll continue to see that as the pattern.
Pushed all the right buttons, you say, Pete?
Yes.
Well, speaking of that, I had put out a call on Twitter about 10 minutes before the episode started and said, basically, you know, hey, we're going to be giving away two buttons this week in addition to Agent of the Week. And, you know, kind of an attempt to kind of keep the conversation going, have some of the conversation go our way through the podcast to our listeners and whatnot. And though I admit I had put out there, you know, it definitely would have been a button winner if somebody had called our listener line, which is through Google Voice, 732-707-1815. And if they had left a message about the show, that would have been a guaranteed button. And though that didn't happen this week, dry my eyes as I might at the sadness of it. The first person, though, to respond to this notion, before I even mentioned the phone line thing, of just we're giving away some swag. The first person on Twitter was Emily Ether. And reward for her enthusiasm, I'm going to be getting in touch with Emily. She will get an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. button, as, of course, some people at New York Comic Con did. We were handing them out there. Just kind of, you know, as a reward for her general enthusiasm. But when it comes to Agent of the Week, Pete, we are actually in late breaking news here, Pete. We're going to crown not one, but two Agents of the Week. This on account of what we referred to earlier, enthusiasm over Fitzmonkey. There was on Twitter, Brittany, who goes by the Twitter handle FOB_FAB. She was the first person to use the hashtag Fitzmonkey. I believe it was even before I did on Twitter. She might have just heard me at New York Comic Con, and you can't hear it that well in the audio because of the applause that I was getting for my, you know, my wonderful comments and humor and whatnot. So we're declaring Brittany Agent of the Week. In addition to that, somebody else who has mentioned on Twitter, while the episode was wrapping up, there's Beth on Twitter, who is Beth01. She made this comment on Twitter. The question is, how would that scene have played with a brave monkey? Hashtag Fitz, hashtag Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So though she is not mentioning specifically hashtag Fitzmonkey, I saw that Beth was mentioning, you know, the brave monkey, the brave Fitzmonkey. So we declare Beth as well an Agent of the Week, and I'll be in touch with both of them tomorrow to see if they would like to collect their buttons. But Pete, congratulations to both Brittany and Beth on becoming Agents of the Week.
Well deserved there for the killer Agent Bees.
Ooh, what a wonderful observation there, Pete. Of course, in support of the Fitzmonkey. Well, Pete, with that, you can have a button anytime you want. But if our listeners would like to have a button, we are, you know, going to be declaring another Agent of the Week in you know, short order. You can share your feedback about the podcast, feedback about the latest episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., feedback in general. You can email fantasticgeek@gmail.com. That is with a PH. You can tweet at fantasticgeek on Twitter. I don't exactly know where else you would tweet other than maybe to birds, but that is also spelled with a PH. You can leave a message on the listener line, 732-707-1815. Don't be shy. Hear your voice on the podcast. And lastly, Pete, someone can leave a comment on either shieldpodcast.blogspot.com or what we love most of all, Pete, comments on iTunes. And if you give us 5 stars on there, I'm not making any promises. This isn't exactly a bribe. But let's just say that would be pushing the right buttons.
Yes, and they're nice buttons. They are nice buttons.
Now, Pete, though I received at New York Comic Con after my praise for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Portraying smart women, and I had this applause as I said thank you for making inspiring television for my daughter. Though I am beloved, you, Pete, are infinitely more beloved. In fact, we can use the numbers and say you're about 4 times as beloved on the Twitter. how can people get in touch with you on Twitter?
Well, 1,000 people can't be wrong at this point. You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKelaar, KetElaar.
And on Twitter, I am Looking Back Lost. I also usually am the one manning, or since I am such an equal opportunity praiser of smart women, if I am, I'm usually the one personing the Fantastic Geek Twitter feed, which sometimes, side note, I'm not sure what pronoun to use. Am I saying I or we? But anyhow, I look forward to talking to people on Twitter on either name. And Pete, I guess with that, oh, one quick thing, Pete, we did hear somewhere on the Twitterverse that, is it the last Tuesday of October? It's going to be a repeat, October 29th?
Yes, the pilot will be a repeat. So we have next week's episode. So we will be 5 episodes deep. It'll give us a 1 week break, and then we will return for the first episode of November Sweeps.
Good stuff indeed. So people can kind of plan their calendars accordingly. And Pete, with that, I think I'm all done here. I'm ready for my night gun, and I guess I will turn things over to you for your final word.
I'm gonna go play with my phone.